Hello, welcome to Spotlight, illuminating the island's artistic talent.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, we catch up with the 11th Manx Bard as he passes the halfway mark in his bardship. Hear more about the success of this year's One Act Play Festival and speak to the director of the winning play and check out some more wonderful art which opened in an exhibition over the Easter weekend. Remember, do get in touch with any creative artistic endeavours you may be involved in planning, hoping to create or would really like to put in the spotlight. Yes. Poetry, theatre, music, literature, ceramic, sculpture, drag, film, mime, TV, social media, you name it. If it's arty, get in contact. Must have a Manx link, of course. Howard Kane with an E at manxradio.com. Spotlight@manxradio.com. Love to hear from you. Get you on the show. Without further ado, thoroughly enjoyed the Isle of Man Art Society Easter exhibition at the Villa Arcade, been going since I was in short pants, which to be fair was only a couple of years back. And yes, I did buy some artwork, rapidly running out of wall space. However, there was also another wonderful exhibition which opened its doors over the Easter weekend. And here we are, Easter Sunday, and down at Evans in Port St Mary to enjoy the wonderful exhibition Trees, Stones and Jewels, the latest from Andrew McKellar. And good afternoon to you. Wonderful afternoon, a good turnout.
A very good turnout. It's very nice. It's very gratifying that so many people have come out on Easter Sunday to see an exhibition.
Well, I think they should as well. Wonderful. Tell us about the title, Trees, Stones and Jewels.
Ah, right. Well, the trees and stones form part of the Isle of Man. The jewels is the mystery bit, but basically it refers to the fact that more colour is being introduced into my pictures, which is deliberate and comes about from the fact that when you get out on the island, you will often find that the colour of the sunlight or the morning, sunrise, sunset, has actually impregnated everything that you look at. I like to think that's why they say we're the jewel of the Irish Sea.
Absolutely.
It stuns me how a sunset can influence the total view that you're looking at. It reflects on the stones. It's gorgeous.
So predominantly pen and ink, but as you say, introducing these elements of colour.
Yeah, that's still ink. It is pen and ink, occasional pencil work, they're pretty much all of them are pen and ink, but still I'm using the deconstruction of water-based inks so that there is a variety of colour that's built in, which is quite random, but it allows a flow in the picture, which I think is quite important to giving a sense of places being like a living, a living place. Which I like, but also I get a buzz out of decay. There's certain things which are clearly decaying, and I do worry that perhaps we're going to tidy up the island a bit too much.
And as you're saying that, we're looking at one of the, I was going to say numerous, I shouldn't say that, should
no,
I?
It isn't, but
there,
numerous.
There are a few old boats.
This has gone.
It's gone altogether, so it's a lovely old boat. Where was this?
That was in Peel. That's down by the bridge in Peel, the harbour that under the bridge where you're heading down the river out of town, actually,
yeah.
Quite a way out of town. There was a wreck of a boat down there, which I don't even know the name, but it was lovely, really nice to look at.
And what is it sort of draws you as you're going around the island? I mean, I'm assuming, do you go around and do you just sort of see a site and think, this works? Do
sometimes.
A quick sketch there and then, or how does that work?
Sometimes that's what I do. Sometimes I will just do a quick sketch and that becomes the picture. More often I'll take photographs and take several photographs and try and build a picture out of it. But also I will make efforts to go and visit sites that I consider interesting, like, for instance, Mill Circle, Ballachelly, Cashelinard, and things like that. Mill Circle, different composition from what you normally see, because since we've had the wind, we can now actually see Snaefell from up there. And I perhaps exaggerated it very slightly to get it into the picture. But it kind of works.
And what is it that catches your eye then? Is it the design? Is it the makeup of something you look at? Is it the architectural look? Is it the textures? Is it just the light and shade?
Textures and light predominantly, but also where something is placed. I like it being in a sense of emptiness. Mm-hmm. I think I'm not the first to have seen that. That's why I say that I think in ancient terms, the people who've been here many years before regarded that as a good place to put their sacred sites. And you can see it with the meal circle. There are ways in which you look at that. There is nothing abstracting what's above it. The same with Kashtal. But Kashtal is great because you can see it in front of the mountains, mm-hmm. or you can see it looking out over the sea, which is how I like it. Balakeli's the same. If you look from Balakeli from slightly below it, you see nothing above it. It's just there. And the Aragon stones are the same. It's just sky above. And I'm sure a sense of ancient spirituality, they use that. I'm sure of it. And I think we still do. But then, as people that I've known in the past would say, that's because they often built the new religion built its sites where people used to congregate and go. So, yes, we use it still.
We do. And is it all work? The last time we chatted, it was, I think, Harbours and Safe Places, the exhibition
right.
a couple of years ago. Have these all been done since, or these pieces that have been done before, during, after?
Most of this has been done since. There are a couple of pieces that were done before, and there are various ideas that came about. Like, for instance, this was one of the pre-production pieces for what went on the boat. This is an older picture. I think this was in the exhibition before. But the rest of it, there's one other, which is the Ravens over Mackle.
Oh, yeah, that's lovely.
Which I must admit I like. But again, because it's empty, and you're looking down there, but you still get a sense of the emptiness. Maybe it's something perverse in me, but I like that.
No, me too. I'm always drawn to empty spaces and desolate spots and such like. Yeah. And we've got a mixture in the exhibition of that, some of the beautiful landscapes, other places like the one that catches the eye as soon as you come in, which is a lighthouse there. I saw it and thought, I recognise that straight away. And you were asking me, oh, but you know where it is. And I do. Couldn't tell you, though, until you told me it's down in Castletown.
Yeah.
Wonderful, though. Great, that one. And again, you really get that sense of these really muted colours.
Yeah. I will. The colours, for that one, you have to bring in a bit of red, I think, because the red forms part of the actual image that people are familiar with. But still, most of it is to do with getting the sense of light in by the breakdown of the ink in the first place. But the red helps you get the banding that's on the lighthouses. It kind of works. The colour helps, and I like to think that it's not quite the jewel image which I prefer that we get from here for instance, but it still adds a slightly more than just the deconstruction of a particular ink.
So what is it that fascinates you with the media, with pen and ink?
It's unpredictability. I like to think of myself as an abstract painter. These will flow and mix and retain their colour. I like that randomness. I think the randomness is important to images which want to portray something as if it's a living thing. Because ultra straight lines don't fit with living things. A little bit of randomness fits. It's like when we look at things, how do we tell if they're alive? It's really because they're not still. So although there's a lot of stillness in the picture, I like some of the objects not to look still. I want people to look at them as if there's a sort of movement. Not much, just I like that to come through from the drawing.
Yeah. We were saying that before we were looking at, I think, the harbour just behind us here down in Peel Harbour, which looks absolutely still. You just sort of, you just see the reflection and this feels like this absolute sort of stasis on that one. And then a bit further down, which is the Port St Mary, I think, at night. And again, there's just a feeling of more movement going around there, isn't it? It just sort of feels like there's more movement there compared to the ones either side. And you really do pick that up. Do you have a favourite sort of subject. I mean, I know, again, harbours, obviously, some of the architectural things, but as you say, there's far more abstract ones just based on the landscapes.
I like the landscapes. I particularly like Fort Island because it stands out on its own. But also, I really like Ballochkelly. Mm-hmm. It's somewhere I go back to draw regularly. Not a lot of people know the site, which I can't say is bad for me. But it has a sense of being on its own within a space, which I really like. And it picks up the light when you've got evening sunshine on it. And it makes for great pictures.
It's great stuff. Small, but perfectly formed. And captures the essence of some of the island's remote landscapes and iconic structures. Trees, Stones and Jewels is on at Studio 42 in Port St Mary until mid-May. All the work is for sale, though don't leave it too long if you're looking to buy, as there were already a few dots there before I left. Now, we heard a poem from the 11th Manx Bard, Bradley Chambers, a week or so back to celebrate World Poetry Day, and I promised we'd hear more from Bradley as he passes the halfway mark in his time as Bard. Well, it's a bit later than planned, for which my apologies, but here he is. First off, I asked Bradley if the first part of his bardic year had shaped up as he'd imagined.
It shapes itself, I think, as the year goes on. So people approach with requests, and that really determines what I write about, what I do, what events I attend. So it's very organic. You never know what's going to come next, really, and you respond and react accordingly.
And so has it affected, do you think, your writing style?
Well, you have to be able to write at short notice. So writing under pressure is a skill if I didn't have before, I certainly have now, because sometimes you're not given very much notice at all. But I do my best, and that's the thing. It's a case of trying to write something that really captures the feeling that person or that organisation wants to evoke, and just doing the best you can with it. But it's very different writing for other people, for other reasons, for other themes, rather than just writing for myself because I want to write a poem.
Yeah, exactly. And are you the sort of person who sort of thrives with a deadline, or is it a case of, oh my God, deadline coming up?
Well, no, luckily I like pressure, really. I write well under pressure because you know you have to produce something and it has to be something of good enough quality. So I just see it as a challenge and I really enjoy it.
And do you think when you're writing the poems again, because you were saying, I think when we first spoke, how you like writing in different styles and you like the different types of poetry, whether it's free of vanels or whether it's, you know, whatever type of poetry, you like experimenting. Do you find when someone comes in with a request or a particular event, you think, actually, this might suit this? Or does it, again, is it quite organic?
It is organic, and normally people don't really know exactly the shape of poem or the type of poem that they're looking for. So what you do is you do some research, you do your homework, you find out what the event is, what the purpose of it is, or what the individual's really wanting you to bring about, and you shape your poem accordingly, and it grows by itself, really, is what I find.
Any unusual requests so far that you thought, oh, that was a bit, I never thought I'd be writing a poem about that?
I never thought I'd be writing at such short notice sometimes, but I think one of the biggest challenges was the One World Centre that I've become slightly involved in, and they asked for a poem for their Global Learning Week back in November, and I think there was a problem with communication, but it just didn't get to me as soon as it was intended to get to me, so I ended up with 3 days Ooh. To put that together, and I was on holiday at the time, but I had a bit of free time, so I devoted it to that, and in the end I think it worked out well enough. They seemed happy enough with it.
And what about the performance aspect, because again, a lot of poets will write, obviously, clearly, otherwise there wouldn't be poets, but aren't necessarily always used to the performance aspect. Where are you on that spectrum? Did you sort of perform before? Is that something you've had to adapt to?
I've had to adapt to it. I do quite like performing, but it doesn't necessarily mean I'm good at it. I think I'm naturally shy as an individual anyway. I'm fairly introverted, so actually going out there and being bold and brave and really performing something with confidence confidence is a bit of a challenge for me, but I've been able to do it, and it's just lovely getting the feedback from the audience and knowing that they've really enjoyed something that I've created. So that really sort of spurs you on, and often you don't think something's gone down terribly well, you don't think that something's really worked, but then there's always someone who comes up to you afterwards and said, I really like that particular poem. So you never know what's going to work for any individual. It's really interesting.
That's always true. And do you get, that's an interesting point, I mean, do you get lots of feedback at events from the audience?
You get some feedback. I mean, I think people are fairly reticent about giving feedback sometimes, but what I do is I approach people that I know well. I ask friends, family members, or people I don't know well, people from the poetry community, and I ask, what do you really think about this poem? You know, give me some feedback, good or bad. And people are usually quite happy to do that, and that certainly helps. You know if something's working or if something isn't, just by people's response to it.
As we said, we're just over the halfway mark now. Any big events coming in the remaining, well, just under 6 months?
There is one thing that I'm working on myself. It was an idea I had to try and bring all the bards together, including the youth bards, because we really mustn't forget about the youth bards. And we've just inaugurated the most recent youth bard as well. So, and I believe she's coming on in a week or so. Not Matilda Watson. So I thought of bringing all the bards together and writing a collective poem. And most people, or if not everyone, seems really up for that. So I've got the theme of summertime in the Isle of Man. I'll put together the poem, I'll shape it and craft it, but I want all the bards to really contribute one or two lines into that. And I hope it'll work. And what we end up with at the end of that in around June, July time should be pretty interesting, I think. And it'll be a genuinely collaborative event.
Oh, brilliant. If we can, catch up after that, perhaps, because it'd be fantastic to hear the final result on that. Right, let's have a little bit of poetry then, because at the end of the day, that's what we're talking about. And you are indeed the 11th bard, as you say. So you've got some wonderful poems, which you'd flown by me, I must admit. I love them all. We won't have time to get them all in, I think, but they go from In the Heart, the more serious numbers, the pensive numbers, to the much more sort of comical situations, which we've probably all been in and all can relate to. All right, I have a request. It made me smile because I think we've all been there, and with this one, simply called The Fly.
A bright and happy evening, the middle of July. I poured myself a sherry and let the time go by. At that point, I heard it, a whine, a buzzing drone. At that point, my peace went. I was no more alone. At that point, I saw it, a disconcerting zoom. And everywhere I saw it, darting through the room. At first, I thought, ignore it. It might just go away. I offer up a compromise. Be quiet, I'll let you stay. This insect was no diplomat. It was not so benign. It maintained its irritation. I thought, well, that's just fine. Two can play at that game. The battle lines were drawn. It was time to get to business. I would take the fight head on. I tried to get it cornered, but the fly was much too quick. It manoeuvred out of eyesight and beyond my swatting stick. I chased it round the living room and onwards up the stairs, in each bedroom and the bathroom, till I caught it unawares. I found it resting on a curtain. I lunged straight at it and beyond, straight through an open window into the garden pond. Now things had gone too far. I must destroy that fly. I must kill it, must end its life. That fly must surely die. There are only two of us, one too many, in this place. I grabbed a can of fly spray and back upstairs I raced. Its days were surely numbered. The fly would soon be dead. But no matter where I looked, it was several steps ahead. I chased the creature back downstairs and said, it's you or me. And then it went quite frantic in its fury to be free. Like a bullet, flew straight at me, right between the eyes. Sent me tumbling backwards, just imagine my surprise. Then it made its fatal error as I got up from the floor. It flew into the kitchen and I quickly shut the door. At that point, the cat came in. Its head came through the flap. The fly, it seized its final chance, went straight through the open gap. I could not quite believe it. I thought I'd had it beat. I stand here staring at the cat, contemplating my defeat. Dazed and wet and worn out, that fly it won hands down. It never once gave up on hope and made me look a clown. So let this be a lesson. When all hope seems quite lost, it takes a lot of courage to survive at any cost. I do not blame the blighter. It won the game 1-0, and in that great wide wonder, it's out there flying still. So, when the game seems over, don't give in too soon, still try. There's something altogether humbling to be upstaged by a fly.
Happens to me every day. Wittily captured by Bradley in verse there, and we'll catch up with him again, as we said, before the end of his year and hear about that project. Hopefully, that end of the year will be here before you know it, no doubt.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
Now, the One Act Play Festival was a great success this year down at its spiritual home at the Erin Arts Centre. To hear more about the festival and the winning play, plus what happens now the dust has settled, I had a chat with Madford Chair Leandra Lawler and director of the winning play presented by the Russian Players and one of the coordinators of the One Acts, Sarah Lockyer.
It was my first year as chair. It was fabulous. We were really blessed in that we had wonderful footfall at the festival down in Port Erin at the Erin Arts Centre. We did it over four nights, and I was very nervous. I read from scripts because I was that nervous each night. However, the audience was so receptive to every play. The youth night was a highlight for myself. We are very lucky to have one of the youth winners here today. Maddie performed in Juliet's Garden, who was also part of a team for stage one, which under the wonderful tutorage of Jackie Hawks. So that was a wonderful highlight for me. And then obviously the play that when I was reading them before we went to the festival was Blood of Your Lamb, Blood and Lamb.
Blood of the Lamb.
Blood of the Lamb, sorry. And it was amazing to watch it from the paper, from the script, on the actual night. And it won, so that was wonderful, which Sarah directed. For me, wonderful festival, really enjoyed every single minute of it.
And good audiences?
Audiences were great. I mean, we had full house on the youth night, which was the Friday night, and near full houses on every other night. It was fabulous to see so many people who supported us and left smiling. It was great. We had a great time. It was fab. I'm shattered, but it was great.
they are tiring. It does take a lot out of you, doesn't it?
Yes.
I think even from an acting point of view or playing backstage, but actually organising the whole thing, I'm sure is a full-on job for a goodly number of weeks. Better mention the adjudicator again, because that's a very important part of the festival, having a good adjudicator.
We had the fabulous adjudicator, Sue Doherty. She came across, she gave some wonderful feedback. She continually gives feedback to us as well, even after going back to Liverpool and things for in the future. Sarah, you got some lovely feedback from Sue.
Got some excellent feedback from Sue. Very supportive. I believe that each of the teams really appreciated the time she took to spend with them as individuals after the main adjudication to give them pointers. And it was all very supportive, but every little detail she spotted and commented on. And she was absolutely charming through the whole process. So we were very, very lucky with her.
So tell us a little bit about the winning one-act play.
Well, I directed Blood of the Lamb. It's a powerful play, and I think one of the things about the one-act festival that we've discussed in the past is that it gives groups an opportunity to do something a little different from maybe their main productions during the year. Blood of the Lamb focuses on issues surrounding abortion law in America. In the way that women are treated, and it's quite disturbing, actually, quite moving. But in the centre of it, it's two female actors who are from very different worlds, their characters, who kind of find common ground eventually. But it's an intense play. It's a play that just involves this kind of ebb and flow between these two women in very distressing circumstances. And I was very blessed with the two actors. I had Robin Hughes, who was nominated for Best Actor, and then Ailsa Harrop, who won Best Actress, in the festival. So that was very gratifying. I enjoyed is probably the wrong word, but I got a lot out of directing such a powerful play.
And was it something you'd always wanted to do or just found for the festival?
It was actually something that Ron, our chairman, had suggested that we look at. He knows Arlene Hutton, the playwright, and he'd seen a production of this at the Edinburgh Festival a few years ago. He suggested it to the group, and the actors who were in it both said, yes, this is something we really want to be involved in because it's got a powerful message, and they really did it justice. So.
And it is always more, I don't know, it's sometimes, it can be more challenging, I think, in the sort of festival environment, maybe doing, as you say, a hard-hitting play. And you often see, obviously, in the festivals, a real mix between
yes.
completely lightweight throwaway farce and these really in-your-face pieces which are tackling very difficult topics.
Absolutely. I mean, we had 11 plays over the four nights.
Yeah.
We had everything. We had kind of psychological drama. We had comedy. We had just a lovely variety. But interestingly, I think a lot of them were quite serious plays this year. Ones that were trying to get across messages about relationships and maybe society more generally. So it was challenging for the audiences, but also entertaining at the same time, I think. And I think we got the balance right. Even in the youth plays as well, you know, there was some quite serious topics handled. We had lockdown, which was about a school in lockdown when there's supposedly an intruder and we don't know what's going on. And the youngest group as well, who won the Newcomer Award, they did a play that was all about emotions and how to deal with them. So it was lovely to see that theatre bringing out opportunities to discuss important issues as well as entertaining the audience.
So as the winner of the One Act Play Festival in the Isle of Man, you now get to take this play across and go, is this
yes.
now into the regional heats or the
it's
British
the
Championships?
It's northern semi-finals of the All England Theatre Festival, and that's in Saltburn on Teesside this coming bank holiday, May bank holiday weekend. So we're going to go over and perform at the Saltburn Community Theatre and to a new audience, new adjudicator, and we're really looking forward to that.
So are rehearsals continuing throughout, or are you having a break and then going
well,
back?
Well, I must admit, I'm also busy rehearsing something else for Russian Players at the same time, so we're fitting in a few rehearsals along the way just to kind of brush it up, but also, of course, to reflect advice from the adjudicator so that we can, you know, respond to what she said and see if we can make it an even more powerful play when we get over there. So,
and is it something you've done before, take a play across?
Nope, this is my first time.
Oh, gosh.
This is my first time.
So excited and a little bit nervous.
Excited, nervous. Mm. It's going to be a fun road trip, I think.
I think it will be. It's lovely theatre, I must admit. I have been there and it is terrific. And not that different to the Erin Arts Centre, I think, in sort of
No, I think that's right. Yeah. I think the audience capacity is about 150.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
And I'm just going back briefly to Erin Arts. I mean, it was lovely to perform there. I think the one act plays, it works very well in that kind of intimate setting.
Ideal environment in many
and
ways.
We had a local sponsor as well, Blackford's, who are based in Port Erin, and they came along and supported, and the commissioners came, and
yeah.
we just felt very much as if we were representing the community as a whole, which was great.
And it is important, I believe, as you say, for any of these festivals to have backers and sponsors to actually, otherwise chances are they're not going to happen.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
MADFA's a charity, so we do depend heavily on sponsorship and young people joining and helping and supporting and promoting what we actually do. One of the wonderful things that came out of this year's festival is we have three plays going forward this year for the Derek Jacobi Award, which is for new playwrights. Last year, obviously, Jenny Derbyshire won with Shelter, which was phenomenal. I don't know if any of you got the chance to see Shelter. It was just amazing. And this year we have Roast Dinner, written by Lisa Smith, Parallels, written by N. Kinley and
Liz Wood,
and Theodora by Gemma Varnum.
And we'll be talking to the joint winners of the Young Actor of Man 2026, Maddie Wood and Emma Louise Taylor, next week. That's about it for this week, however. Be good in the meantime. See you next week, and whatever you're doing, be creative about it. Hee-moo!